This is the sound of turning ideas into software. This is the sound of engineering and passion. Work. Work more. Work harder. Experiment. Build. Break. And build again. Write code. Improve it. Job done. Celebrate. Insurance, finance, retail, defense, robotics, energy. Amethyx.
Welcome back to another episode of Data Science at Home podcast. I'm Francesco, podcasting from the regular office of Amethyx Technologies based in Brussels City, Belgium. Today I'm going to continue the explanation of graph neural networks as I started in the last episode, so feel free to download the episode at datascienceathome.com or any other distributor like Apple Podcast, Google, Amazon, Spotify, and many others out there. In this episode, I would like to go into much more technical details about how graph neural networks can in fact be used for estimating, for predicting, of course, as the big brothers neural networks, you know, traditional way of doing deep learning, for example, why it is indeed sometimes for certain applications much better having a structural estimator like indeed graph neural networks, and also what are some of the let's say pros and cons of using neural networks. So in this episode I'm going to continue that conversation, going into much more detail about, for example, how do we transfer information across the network. I will explain what the pooling mechanism is, and also several techniques related to the concept of message passing between parts of the graph. I will also give additional details about the topologies, the possibilities that one can have when it's time to design, for example, the topology of a graph neural network. And so, for example, the existence of multigraphs, hypergraphs, and hierarchical graphs. And last but not least, I will briefly explain the attention mechanisms that are also possible with graph neural networks and, of course, generative models, or that is generating data with graph neural network. But first, let's discuss how graph neural networks work, because it's something that is, it's a mechanism that is a bit, kind of diverges from the traditional way of doing deep learning. There are, of course, many similarities, as I will explain, but essentially there is a specific way of representing information with a graph neural network. So we know, to start with, that a graph is composed of, let's say, a number of nodes and a number of edges. So the nodes are, the can represent, for example, in a molecular structure, the atoms or the proteins in a protein network, or genes in a gene network, or, for example, people in a social network. And the edges represent, as we said, the relationships between any two nodes, two or multiple nodes. So one node, in fact, can be connected to many other nodes, not necessarily two, and that forms the so-called topology of the network, that is the shape of the network, right? Now, how do we represent information? Well, there is a big problem when it comes to graph neural networks or graph structures in general, which is the fact that, the topology of the network can change depending on your problem, depending on the use case. And this means that the networks, we have to find a universal way to represent the network, regardless of how the nodes and the edges are connected. And you also need a way, let's say, kind of a universal way to represent the learning that a neural network or a graph neural network would perform. So that learning mechanism has to be, as we already said, something that is agnostic of the, let's say, topology of the network, or the number of nodes or the number of edges that you have in the network, right? Because you don't want to have a, specialized learning mechanism that works only for one particular topology, and then you have to, let's say, redesign everything from scratch whenever you change the topologies, because these are also dynamic networks, and you know their topologies can change anytime. So there is a mechanism which is called the pooling mechanism that allows one, you know, a practitioner to cope with diversity of topologies, in fact. And what is the pooling mechanism? It's something that is relatively simple concept that consists of representing nodes or a node with an embedding, so-called node embedding, which is usually a vector of certain number of dimensions. And again, one can choose and design the number of dimensions they need for a particular use case and for a particular training data set. But essentially, we represent a node as an embedding, as a vector of usually float or, you know, precision, double precision numbers or floats in general. Also, edges can be represented and usually are represented as a vector of floats. So again, there is a node embedding and an edge embedding. And at some point, one needs to, let's say, represent a bunch of nodes and a bunch of edges with respect to others. That's exactly what we do when we learn, you know, when we train a graph neural network. That means keeping the topology and, let's say, updating these embeddings, these embedding vectors for the nodes and for the edges, or both. So what we actually do is essentially representing, given, for example, a particular node, one can represent the neighbors of that node by looking at all the embeddings of the neighboring nodes and then pooling these embeddings, pooling these vectors with a function that usually takes, for example, the 4, 5, 6, 10 adjacent nodes or node embeddings and, for example, sums them up or calculates the mean or the average or takes the maximum value or the minimum value. So this is like the a form of so-called aggregation of node embeddings. And of course, as you can understand, one can do exactly the same for the edges. And so one can say, okay, well, I have some edges in the in the first layer of the network. I will create a new network which has the same topology, but the embedding, the edge embedding of the network at the next layer will be essentially updated starting from the layer, from the previous layer. Again, with a form of aggregation that considers the, for example, all the edges that are connected to a subset of the nodes and taking, of course, an aggregation that is so-called pooling that, again, can be an average, can be the sum, or can be the max or mean. And so by using this mechanism, one would start from an input graph, right? And then it would start, you know, creating these layers as much as we do for, you know, traditional deep learning in which we have multiple layers, so-called hidden layers. And essentially we do exactly the same because we are creating new layers with new graphs where, in fact, we don't really have a new graph, a completely new graph, but we would have a graph that has most of the time the same topology. So the way nodes and edges are connected is exactly the same. It's just that their embedding is changing, right? It's getting updated with respect to some of the concepts that we have seen. For example, looking at the single node, calculating the average of the neighboring nodes and propagating that information to the next layers. Until we get to the last layer, which is usually called the classification layer in case of a classification problem, that is essentially, you know, as an output, which is the predicted value, the y usually referred to, which is, you know, has exactly the same meaning and the same shape of the predicted value in traditional deep learning networks. And so with this mechanism, one would have, let's say, the input data, the training data, and the, let's say, ground truth of the training data, so the pairs X and Y, we are very familiar with this. And what we do during the learning process of a graph neural network is essentially learning the embeddings that represent that graph, right, that represent that network. Now, there is a there are mechanisms to, let's say, pass these messages between parts of the graph. And as we said, this is the aggregation functions. And the reason we want to, let's say, transfer that information from, you know, between parts of the same graph is because we want, you know, to implement some form of propagation of information. So imagine you have one of these massive networks, not necessarily massive, but, you know, you have a big graph with a relatively large number of nodes and edges, right? For example, a biological network or a social network. So in that case, you would like to propagate the information that you gather in some parts of the network where there are, for example, some communities or, you know, some nodes connected with each other in a much higher degree with respect to the other parts of the network. So we can, you know, suppose that there are some form of communities if you are dealing with, for example, social networks. But if you're dealing with gene networks, it could be in bioinformatics. It could be that, for example, these genes or these nodes are connected, let's say, in a different way with a higher degree because they contribute to some biological process, for example, for which we need to see that high degree of connection. So when we learn these relationships, what we want to do is, in fact, propagating this information across the network, because it could be that other nodes are affected by, you know, these highly connected subnetworks or subgraphs in any particular way. And this is true most of the time for, you know, any real-world network. The fact that a particular node is affected by a community, of course, it is possible. As much as a particular gene or a particular protein is affected by another part of the graph in which there are other proteins and other genes connected with each other in a different way. So if the data, of course, the training data supports this speculation, which at the beginning is a speculation, but if that speculation is reflected in the data, well, then it means that when we train graph neural networks against the data that we have at hand, if the data support this information, well, then it means that that type of connection and that type of topology should, in fact, emerge from the training mechanism. Hey there, let's talk about finding a job that's not just challenging, but also rewarding and fun. And if you're a software engineer looking to make an impact, then you'll want to hear about Bloomberg. They're building the world's most trusted information network for financial professionals, and they need engineers like you to join them. As someone who's been in the tech industry for a while, I know how hard it can be to find the right employer. But when I stumbled upon Bloomberg, I was blown away by their commitment to building a diverse workforce full of fresh perspectives. Any engineer looking for an appealing and beneficial career should consider Bloomberg. So why Bloomberg? Well, you'll be part of a team that builds tools to help the world's leading business and finance decision makers. You'll work with some of the brightest minds in the industry to develop solutions that are relied on by more than 350,000 financial professionals around the globe to make critical business decisions. And let's not forget that great engineers love a challenge. At Bloomberg, you'll solve complex real-world problems for customers across the globe capital markets, from real-time market data to sophisticated analytics, powerful trading tools, and more. Bloomberg engineers work with systems that operate at scale. Lastly, Bloomberg believes in using the right tools for the job. The majority of their software is built in C++, JavaScript, TypeScript, and Python, and Bloomberg engineers are active members of the open source community. So, if you are a software engineer looking for an exciting and fulfilling career, head over to bloomberg.com/careers to learn more. That's bloomberg.com/careers. Now, the same, these functions, of course, can be, this function means the embedding functions that essentially map the single node passed through this function as a function node, and we get the embedding at the next layer. And we do the same for the edges. You know, these are functions that can also be applied to, let's say, the global representation of the graph. So we can have a global graph that in fact is embedded into a vector. So that, you know, we are used to this concept, we should be used by now to this concept, because this is exactly what happens when you have in NLP, for example, in natural language processing, you have neural networks that map, you know, that have embeddings, consider embeddings of the single character or the single word, most of the time it's a single word, or a so-called a token. And then we can have embeddings of phrases, sentences, of paragraphs, or entire documents. And so there is this hierarchical way of embedding things that is pretty much the same for graph neural network. Now, when it comes to topologies, of course, as I anticipated in this episode, there are several ways to create topologies, and there are several types of topologies when it comes to graph neural network. In fact, when it comes to graphs in general, you know, the field of graph neural network is inheriting many of the concepts, if not all the concepts that, you know, are very mature now. It's a very mature theory that comes from graph theory. So, you know, nothing is 100% new in that field. These are things that we know very, very well. There are very established algorithms that are related to graph theory. But when it comes to topology, we can find so-called multigraphs, hypergraphs, and hierarchical graphs. So multigraphs are usually graphs in which a node or two nodes, two or more nodes, can be connected with each other by means of different edges. And different edges can also be different types of edges. So you can think of, for example, two people that are represented by two nodes in a, let's say, a social network graph, would be connected with each other because they are, let's say, family, or because they are friends, or because they are in an intimate relationship. So they are, let's say, friends and boyfriend and girlfriend, let's say. Or in a financial network, we can have any two nodes that are connected with each other by means of an edge that represents, for example, I don't know, a purchase, and another edge that represents some form of interest, some interest rate, or whatever other financial concept. So as you can see, you can use, you know, one can use multiple edges and multiple edge types to connect any two nodes. That's called the multigraph. So the multigraph considers the existence of multiple edges, right? And of course, you can, become even more sophisticated, because one can have an aggregation function or an embedding function that is specialized for each edge type. And so the way you would model, in a graph, in a multigraph network or a multigraph neural network would be, you know, can be extremely sophisticated, because you would specialize an embedding for any particular edge type. And also the type of aggregation can be specific to the edge type. The other type of topology or graph, in fact, is so-called hypergraphs. And before explaining the concept of hypergraphs, I have to explain the concept of hypernodes. Hypernodes are nodes that, in fact, are a representative of a subset of other nodes, right? So you can imagine this. Imagine you have a bunch of nodes, and then you hypothetically zoom out from the network, and you start looking at this graph neural network from high, and you go higher and higher, you zoom out, and at the end of the day, what you would see a group of nodes that becomes just one node. Well, that node is called the hypernode. And of course, you can have different groups that are represented by a single node, or single nodes or single hypernodes, and these hypernodes, of course, are connected with each other by means of hyper edges. So, you know, you have this kind of hierarchical way of representing information, which sometimes help, especially for biological networks, when, for example, you can have millions of nodes, but there are some, let's say, subnetworks or, nodes, in fact, that you would like to represent with just one hypernode because you have, you know, your reasons, your theoretical reasons to do so. And most of the time, that, of course, helps in for example, reducing compute time or the computing effort that you need to propagate information, instead of at a very low level, considering like thousands and thousands or hundreds of thousands of nodes, you would consider just one. If, of course, you can do that, you know, if there is a support from the data for, you know, for you to believe that, for the modeler to believe that, in fact, a bunch of nodes can be represented by just one hypernode. Now, what happens when we, you know, want to update network parameters? Well, the thing is that there is a practice for training neural networks, which is indeed updating, as I said, these network parameters and in terms of the edge embedding and node embeddings. And how do we update these network parameters? Well, using the same algorithms that we are familiar with, which is usually gradient-based approaches. And so one can update network parameters with gradients that are calculated on usually a randomized you know, batch size or randomized subset with a certain batch size of the training data, so-called mini batches. And the problem is that when you deal with mini batches and graph neural networks, it's not necessarily true that the input will always consider the same subset of nodes, right? This can change. And that's a problem because, you know, the input will, let's say, tickle or touch almost always a different subset of nodes, right? So how do we deal with that you know, limitation? Well, we use so-called node sampling. And there are several forms of sampling nodes from a graph neural network or from a graph in general. One is, of course, random node sampling, which means that you randomly select a node, and then you just look at the 1-degree neighbors, right? Another one is visiting one node and applying some sort of diffusion. That's called diffusion sampling, which means I consider the root node and the diffused node that, of course, are selected with respect to the topology, to how that root node is connected to all the others. And one can also use another form of sampling, which is random walk. So random walk sampling, something that is used, has been used over and over in many graph algorithms, even PageRank, Google PageRank, for example, which consists of selecting a random node and just randomly walk the graph, you know, according to the topology. And so all the visited nodes, in fact, from that random walk become your new sample. So another concept that definitely applies to the, let's say, schema under graph neural networks is so-called attention, right? And we have explained what attention mechanisms are. In fact, that has been kind of the game changer in, let's say, last generation NLP and especially large language models that we use nowadays. Attention, as we all know, is another way of essentially communicating information between, in the case of graph neural networks, graph attributes, right? So, for example, one can consider, well, when we consider the aggregation of a node and its neighboring nodes, we could also consider using a weighted sum. So the weighted sum would indicate, let's say, the magnitude, the amount of how, let's say, this quantity of how much, let's say, this how much important this connection is with respect to all the others, right? And of course, the challenge is to associate weights in a way that is permutation invariant. Don't forget that this is the biggest problem when it comes to graph neural network. We already mentioned in the last episode, you know, the fact that we don't want mechanisms for which if we change the you know, the way we consider nodes, so the permutation of all the nodes, if that changes, an addition symmetrics would change, and we don't want that, you know, all the algorithms that we have trained on one particular permutation of nodes no longer works. So we want to find something that is resistant to the fact that we are permuting. We can be permuting the nodes, right? And so one approach would be to consider a function that essentially maps or assigns a weight based not just on the single node, but based on a pair of nodes. So a function of, let's say, node 1 and node 2, or node I and node j, right? And in this case, this scoring function is interpreted as a function that measures how relevant a neighboring node is in relation to the node that you are considering, the so-called center node. And so using this mechanism, one can enlist, essentially, the functions of, node I and node j for any I and j in the network, and creates this weight, and creating these weights. Now, the data, of course, has to support these weights. So during the learning mechanism, during the learning process, there will be connections that, let's say, will be representing, will have a strong attention with respect to some connections rather than others. And that's exactly what the attention mechanism, how the attention mechanism works. Now, this concept is, in fact, very similarly applied to graphs and goes under the name of graph attention networks, or GAT, in case you need to search something. Of course, in the show notes of this episode, I will report some of the references that I believe are, kind of useful to expand the, the learning from your point of view. Because, of course, this is a topic that, though is very new and much less effort in terms of research has been put in this new field, it's very active. So the literature is, growing and growing. And so it's always nice to have a list of, let's say, papers and blog posts and resources that I consider personally as a good entry point for this new topic. And to be honest, a very fascinating one. Now, what happens is if you have, GAT or graph, the attention mechanism for graphs. Imagine you have a network with several nodes. Each node, of course, is embedded into an embedding vector. We would also have, the weights W1, W2, W3, etc. for each node, right? And these weights are essentially those, the values emitted by these functions that take as input any two pairs of nodes. Any pair of nodes, and emits a value that represents, let's say, the weight, like the how strong that connection is, how important that connection is. Now, we would take all these Ws and essentially aggregate them, and we would have an updated node that now is considering not only the node embedding, but is also considering the attention value that we have assigned to that relationship, right? Now, with this mechanism, when you apply this mechanism to several layers, you get essentially the equivalent of what we have seen, for example, in computer vision, but also in language models, especially large language models, that there might be some terms, some words, some phrases, some sentences, even some paragraphs, because this can be applied in hierarchical fashion, that in fact are... their presence is in fact something on which the learning process pays more quote-unquote attention, right? And so, of course, these are words, pixels, blobs, even entire scenes that help a lot in, enforcing the classifier or the predictor in the last layers because there is this, attention that has been trained on the data themselves. Another capability of graph neural networks is, for example, related to the concept of generative modeling, which also works in case of graph neural networks, just in a different way, because when we say generative models for a graph neural network, we are essentially, generating a topology, right? A new graph, essentially. And topologies, the way nodes are connected or interconnected. So this means that generating a graph, it means that even having one single graph as input or more graphs as input you can generate things that are completely different from the input. Think about in molecular biology, right? You can generate, given whatever input, you can generate structures, graph structures that are kind of, you know, prediction of some whatever biological component or biological process, right? Now, generating a structure is something that, from a mathematical perspective, can be extremely difficult due to the fact that when we consider, you know, the structure of a graph, the topology of a graph, we are considering the number of nodes elevated to the power of 2. So n squared, the number of nodes. Because if you represent, for example, a graph with an addition symmetric, well, what you are doing is essentially blowing the problem with in two dimensions, n by n. So that's n squared, because we would have the addition symmetric that represents essentially the rows, and the columns are essentially the nodes, and then you would have a one or whatever value, non-zero value, in the cell that represents the connection between node I to node j. So modeling ways, you know, this way, of course, is from a mathematical perspective not only difficult but also many times prohibitive. If you think of one of these large networks with even millions of nodes, but even less than millions of nodes, that number to the power of 2 can become billions or hundreds of billions. So the problem becomes, you know, not treatable with the mathematical tools that we have, or definitely with the tools that we have for computers, from computer science. Now, how do we solve a problem like this? Because learning, you know, generating the topology of a network is in fact an important problem to solve. And so one solution could be in, for example, modeling the addition symmetric directly like an image with an autoencoder concept. And so the prediction or the absence, the prediction of the absence or the presence of an edge is usually or can be treated as a binary classification task. And then we would have like the addition symmetric that could be represented as an image. So the n squared, in fact, can be avoided by only predicting known edges and the subset of the edges that are not present. So there are several tricks, of course, that one can consider when it comes to generate models or solving the problem of generative modeling in graph neural networks. And there's also another super fascinating subject that, of course, would require a complete episode only for that. But of course, as I mentioned, I will report some of the important references to the field. Again, this is something that more and more people and more researchers are interested in pursuing. Though the literature is currently, though it's growing, but of course not at the same pace and definitely not in the same volume of traditional deep learning. I personally think that graph neural networks will be the next big field or subfield when it comes to artificial intelligence, due to the fact that these are models, you know, graphical models have always proved to be much more powerful than the traditional models that one can represent a problem with. And this is interesting, and it's important to give the, indeed, attention it deserves, because the capabilities of these powerful models are higher, bigger, and also many times the number of training data that you need, or the volume of training data that one needs to reach the same accuracy or comparable accuracies with respect to traditional deep learning algorithms can be orders of magnitude smaller. So you need much less data. You might need much less data than in traditional deep learning algorithms. And why is that? It's because the fact that you are using a graph, the fact that you are using a complex tool with respect to the usual equations, well, it means that you are, in fact, using much more information during the training process, because the topology is already embedding some sort of information. The way nodes are connected is, in fact, very important for any training, any learning algorithm. And of course, this has proved to work a lot, you know, much, much better in biology, in bioinformatics, gene networks, medicine, social networks as well. So it would be a shame to overlook the power of graphs when it comes to deep learning and to artificial intelligence. I hope you enjoyed the show. I'll speak with you next time.
You've been listening to Data Science at Home podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean to get new, fresh episodes. For more, please follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or visit our website at datascienceathome.com.